about, trying to figure out what it's all about. Existentialist, am I worth anything or just a scout? I don't know,
I don't know, I don't know.
Spending time all alone, sending my songs through the phone, dreaming of a better home, we while focused on trying to hone this craft, witchcraft. I hope the brujas let this last.
I don't know.
That was the great sounds of Watsa with Outside on WNHH LP 103.5 FM New Haven. Myself, Prestige, with my partner in crime, Long Island raised, Elm City made, EZ Blues is in the building. EZ Blues, you're better with introductions more than me. Who do we have with us today on Behind the Brand?
Ladies and gentlemen, look up in the sky. Is it a bird? Is it a plane? Is it one of the top MCs that comes through CT? Someone who has been out there on the grind, touring, dealing with major artists, someone who saw the life out there and was like, hey, we need to build back better here. Yeah, that's right. Play on words. Build back better here, and created a promotion company to make sure that artists that are on the come up can come together and rise. Ladies and gentlemen, put your hands together. Not if you're driving, because if you're driving, you keep your hands at 10 and 2, no car accidents, please. But put your hands together mentally for the amazing Spark Kent. Sir, how are you? Welcome to the show.
What's going on, man? Thank you guys for having me.
Awesome. Very, very cool. So obviously, for those who don't know, let's tell a little bit about yourself. You are an MC. You go by the moniker of Spark Kent. By the way, I absolutely love the name. I think it's a great play on words. It also has some good alliteration in there. What inspired you to be like, hey, you know, because obviously, I mean, it looks like you and I should be playing D&D together. So what inspired you to pick up the mic and become an MC?
I think it was like a combination of a lot of different things. Kind of grew up in a very, very backwards home environment growing up. Kind of like ran away at 16, that type of a deal. And growing up, music was just always an outlet for me. It was kind of always there for me when a lot of my other peers and friends were getting into other stuff at a younger age. So instead of, you know, going so heavy to like the booze or the drugs, I kind of went more so to the music first and kind of let that guide me, and then started writing more. And after a while, I had a music teacher actually in like eighth grade who seen that I was writing a lot, and she pushed me a lot. She said, you should really try to get out and record and see what happens. And here we are like 11, 12 years later, and quite the journey.
Well, no, it really is. And by the way, thank you for being as open about that. Because it's what makes a good artist. And what I really like about what you do is you don't talk about things you don't go through. You are, you know, you stay true to your point of view, which to me, you know, and we love to talk about the uncomfortable conversations here. So we're going to have one. To me, people that, you know, are palm colored like you and I, you know, can be considered vulture cultures if you're trying to do hip hop the way that hip hop has already been done. But when you bring your own narrative in there and you use the medium to tell your story, it is then, you know, adding to the culture. And I wanted to give you some props and credit for that. Did you have issue with that coming through, or, you know, were you able to slay the dragons?
I think I officially slayed the dragons, conquered the quests, a lot of them. But yeah, in the beginning, there was definitely a lot of adversity. I remember going to like Brantford High School, and which is like predominantly white, you know, school. And even in like eighth grade a little bit, there was just a lot of like that locker room bullying of like, you know, you're a white kid. What do you think you're doing? Like, this isn't for you type of a thing. And but at the end of the day, I think art imitates art, right? You know, it's like if you look at even like paintings across the years, across the decades, you know, you start to see a trend of like, oh, this person's got a little bit of this, this person's got a little bit of this. And I don't know, for me, I just resonated like really heavily with hip hop growing up. It a lot of the stuff that was being said was, I was able to relate to that more than so like a lot of like the classic rock or like, you know, pop punk. Don't get me wrong. I like Blink 182 and Sum 41 like everybody else, but right. Yeah.
No, that's on point, man, and I appreciate that. But I see P's got some chime in here. I love it. Yeah, brother.
No chime. It's just, you know, I get it. He related to what he had to relate to. Right. I was just pretty much acknowledging of what he said, you know. He wasn't afraid to separate himself from the pack, and he wasn't afraid, you know, to step out and to be themselves. And especially in high school and that early of an age, it's really hard because you can be very impressionable. You really want to fit in. You really want to, you know, get in contact with as much people as you can. You want to be liked in those early years of your life until you realize, you know, it really doesn't matter what anyone thinks. It matters who you look at in the mirror. That's it. So I'm going to let you guys continue. That's it.
No, definitely. And I feel that on so many levels too, because, yeah, I mean, I've been this way forever. So I just never fit in. And by high school is the moment was like, I could try really, really hard and building a fake persona and, you know, just to fit in with these people, or I could just continue to explore myself, in more ways than one. I mean, it was high school, you know, and that was kind of what we see now. And by continuing to cultivate that, I'm able to grow, and I got to grow as an artist. Mm-hmm. Do you feel kind of similar there, Spark, or should we call you Mr. Tent?
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that when you go against the grain, it's going to, like, put you through a lot of situations where at the end of the day, it's going to make or break you. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's like, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot to learn. You know what I mean? It's not like you get to a certain point and you say, okay, I'm done and I don't want to learn anymore. Like, you have to constantly be wanting to learn more, especially when it comes to like music and art and culture and, you know.
No, definitely. And you seem to be someone who really has an understanding of the touring and the building outside of the norm aspect. You know, most people, when they're coming through, they're doing all this kind of stuff on a come up music wise. They're doing every single showcase possible. They're doing every single thing, or they're just going and they're kicking it where they're going. But you have taken a much more interesting business minded aspect to it. Was that on purpose, or did you stumble into being able to open for some of these great festivals and stuff that you've done?
No, I mean, and it, I'd say overall, it was just like about 10 years of just trial and error, like learning through performing, like what works, what doesn't, what's going to make the artist happy, what's going to make the promoter happy. You know, there's definitely, you have to look at it from all sides, because I think a lot of people go into the music business, specifically booking, and it's either one of two ways. You're either like, I love music and I just want to see people happy with, you know, with the music and bring that to where I can, or you're like a straight, I just want to make the money. How can I make the most money possible? You know? And yeah, I mean, I don't know. Like in the early years, I remember a lot of other rappers, a lot of other artists around me that were doing, like, you know, like club showcases and stuff like that. And I noticed a while, like after a while, it would be like, they promise you like 5 to 10 A&Rs would come out. And then, you know, it would always be the same people. The money's going to the same people. Money's never going in the artist's pockets. So then I just started looking for other ways to perform.
Right.
In the beginning, I actually got reached out to a company by a company called Afton. Presents. I think they're out of like upstate New York, but they were doing kind of like a similar thing to what I'm trying to do now, where they would bring local artists together, put them on a like an actual showcase, not like a hey, pay me some dollars and I'll put you on stage, and then depending on like how many tickets you would sell, they would pay you out from that at the end of the night, which compared to paying other people to perform, you know, even on a small scale, that's better business in my book. So
No, it makes a lot of sense, and it really does, you know, it does put a lot of the, you know, the responsibility on the artist. And you're, as an artist, no matter what, you have to promote yourself 100%. You have to constantly go out there. I spend so much time on social media, and now like trying to figure out the ticky-tacky thing, you know, everything is just becomes more and more weirdly and more evolved. And I think my brain more and more devolves every time one of these aspects evolves. But it's really important, you know, to make the most of all those situations. You know, I am a fan of ticket sales. I am a fan of splitting it any way possible, because it's important. And like when you're dealing with those two types of promoters that you were speaking about, right? The ones that are just there for the good time and, you know, the music, and the people that are just there for the money. With me, as long as either one of them are honest from jump, then I can work with them. Like, I have no problem working with, you know, the promoter that's only there to make money. If he says, hey, look, your band does numbers. I want to put you on this bill because we can make money here. Let's get that out in the first conversation, because then we can build on that. Then I know that this is nothing more than a money opportunity. And we will treat it as such. We will make sure that our merch table, you know, looks spot on and looks super professional. We will take the most advantage of what this platform is, they're giving us. You know, but if it's someone that there's, hey, just come down and play for a little bit. I really dig your stuff and I want to get you in front of as many people as possible. Then I'm going to be like, okay, cool. We're going to play a little bit more of a laid back aspect. We're going to show a little bit more of who we are as humans instead of the business product that I have to put in front of you. And I feel that having those conversations up front, the artist will then know the way that they have to go about their show, because there are different things. It's like any other job, the different type of boss you have will show the type of employee you're going to be. Right. You feel about that?
I think the one thing that it where it differs is kind of like between where you said like a job and like mm-hmm. a lot of these music bookings, if you will, is that like mm-hmm. with a job, almost like an Indeed, like they're going to tell you what qualifications you need and then what your responsibilities are going to be, right? But when you go into like a lot of these shows, it's like, mm-hmm. I feel like a lot of promoters are very like, let's use the word vague, you know, and it's a combination of that. And it's also a combination of you have smaller artists who don't have representation by managers. So they don't know how mm-hmm. to talk the business end. They don't know how to ask for things for themselves. You know, and I think it's a time and a place also, like when to know when to start asking for things for yourself. You know, you can't right. be like day one out the gate being like, I want 10 grand for a show. People are going to laugh at you.
Right.
You know, but if you've been in it for like 10, 20 years and you're bringing out 500 people for a show, you know, now you've got some leverage. Like it's, you know, ticket sales say a lot. And I will say that I love working with people who are more willing to like go out of their way to do that promoting, to try to get those tickets sold, you know, because there's artists out there that think it's not their job at all. And, mm-hmm. you know, I respectfully disagree. I think that if you're performing, it's also your job to try and get your people out there. Mm-hmm. So not, you know, obviously the promoter still holds a great deal of responsibility for that role as well, but it is a shared role in my opinion.
Yeah, definitely. And there's so many other points when being a promoter. Like a promoter isn't just about promoting the show. You're putting the show together. You're making sure that, you know, the acts are all taken care of. Like if you're doing a split hip hop and rock show, you're making sure that there's backline kits. You're making sure that these artists are talking to each other. For the hip hop, you're making sure that, you know, these guys are coming in with the flash drives and speaking to the DJ directly, you know, and then you're making sure you're setting up what the schedule is for the show. You're making sure the show is running on point, on time, which is so super important.
Hard to do without a team.
Exactly. You know, and a lot of people just think like the promoter puts the show together and like slaps a Facebook event out there and thinks that, okay, well, that's all they did for the job. There's a lot more than just that. And I kind of wanted to highlight that a little bit.
For sure.
You know, to let artists know that hooking up with a good promoter, one, you will not see the amount of work they actually do, and they will not talk about it, because that is just between them. And when it comes down to show, like if you go to a show and it feels like the promoter did absolutely nothing and the show ran smooth, that is probably one of the best promoters you've ever worked with. That is somebody you want to build a life around. That is someone whose business model you want to study, because hey, you know, P and I put on shows on a regular basis. And we have a business plan. We sit up, everything's organized. We have everything done from weeks before. Everything goes off smooth, but we are that prepared because we also know that no matter how well prepared you are, the live human aspect of it, something's going to go off the rails. Yep. So even being as prepared as we are, both of us are running around like chickens without a head, you know, until possibly halfway through the show when we're okay with the crowd that's in there, that all the acts have checked in finally, then you can take that exhale and you can get that Jack and Coke because you did a good job. You know, do you have those moments as well?
Yeah, I mean, for sure. Like this, the show that we're doing in December is like it's like our, you know, first, you know, debut show under the Best Buds booking label now. And I mean, in the last 2 months leading up to this, like just the emails alone, like just learning how to like talk to people professionally is at least like musically professionally is a skill in itself, you know? And then there's so many other things, like you said, like you don't really anticipate or plan for. I mean, one of the big things that like on some of the bigger artists that we were trying to get through, in the previous months, like riders, you know, travel fees, hotel fees, all that stuff. Like they could give you a price of, you know, let's just say 10K for easy numbers. And then by the time everything's said and done, you're looking at more like 14K.
Yeah.
Right. You know? So it's, you know, those are little things that I think that people should definitely be aware of before, you know, saying like, oh, I could just book a show because I was that guy, you know, I was like, yeah. I can do this. And now here I am with like a partner and an investor and I'm, you know, we're actually about to go flyer up New Haven today.
There you go. And that's awesome. And I love the fact that you have that boots to ground aspect as well. A lot of people rely more on the digital aspect. And I do feel, especially, you know, obviously the big elephant in the room, especially with COVID and the COVID standards and all of that, and the COVID practices, you know, we become dependent on digital, but digital is not getting the turnouts possible, you know, and it's just not doing it. And a lot of people are still, you know, a little bit gun-shy to go out. Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
The digital is dealing with the oversaturation. So the importance to really go out there and have those physical flyers and put them up on those poles, you know, it's needed because not only are you going out there and you're doing it and now these things are up for however long they're going to be up for, but there's people you're going to run into on the street, you know, and you get to talk with them and you get to build that relationship before. Now you're no longer a digital flyer or a paper flyer. You're a person. And people invest in people. They don't invest in really pretty artwork and pretty flyers. They invest in the people. Do you plan on like hitting Shea Gateway or Southern as well, and maybe trying to talk to some of the students on campus?
But Easy's doing a great thing right now. He's on WNHHLP 103.5 FM New Haven. He's on Behind the Brand with myself and you, Easy Blues, on WNHHLP 103.5 FM New Haven. Spark Kent. Answer Easy Blues' question, my friend. Go right ahead.
I mean, that's definitely a good idea. It's not something we had planned because I'm sure with COVID and everything right now that security is not just going to want random people walking up. But, you know, it's definitely a good idea, I think.
You can pass. And now that we...
I don't know. Yeah, totally. But now that we've already kind of broached it, we've did a little bit of foreshadowing. Let's talk a little bit about this first show you've got going on. What's the date? You know, what can we expect for the bill itself? Where is it? You know, are we playing like a rooftop somewhere? Are we going into the sewers? Like, what's the deal?
Yeah, no. So it's at like this, I would call it like a throwback, dive bar. It's called Stella Blues. Mm-hmm. It's in New Haven. A lot of bands over the years have like come through on the come up, played there first before going on to bigger places like Toads and, you know, so on and so forth. The show is December 11th. Doors open at 7. Show officially starts at 8.
Okay.
Yeah. And it's a Saturday night, so it's gonna run until like 1:45, I think, is when they're gonna turn the lights on.
Right.
Yeah.
And what type of show? Is it just straight hip hop? Is it electronic? Is it a dance night?
Cornucopia of different stuff. It's mostly funk. I would say it's about 60-70% funk / like electronica.
Okay.
Got some my boy Chuck is doing some techno in there, some funk techno. I'm throwing a sprinkle of hip hop in there, doing an original set, a bunch of songs off the new album, Northern Hospitality. My buddy Crise is my roommate, very talented DJ. He's going to be doing a trip hop set. So,
okay.
Yeah. Definitely, it's like a boiling pot, different things.
Nice. Now, do you find, again, this is going to be the first show under this moniker, but do you find that doing these cornucopia things are a benefit, or do you think that it's a little bit harder to pitch a more universal vision?
Well, so the thing is, I mean, it's like our first time trying to do it, right? You know, so hopefully, right. You know, fingers crossed it goes well. I can only speak on my experience in the past, you know, 5 to 7 years of playing out, which usually like, I do have a side project with a friend of mine, Jeff, it's called Pyrex. It's his producer moniker is Pyrex, but about 4 years ago, he started hitting me up and asking me if I wanted to come out and play at, like different festivals, different events with him. Mm-hmm. Started at like a house party out in Philly. And, it was just seeing people's reaction to it. Cause it's like when you go in there, it's normally just all bass music, you know, like a lot of dubstep, some rhythm, you got like pretty light style grammatic stuff, which is kind of where Jeff more falls into the mix. And, for me, like, that's what I love. Like when I got into electronic music back in like 2012-ish, 2014-ish, it was a lot of like pretty lights, a lot of grammatic grizz, just stuff that's got like funk, soul, hip hop, bass, like everything all mixed in one. So yeah, I mean, it's just, again, seeing people's reactions to that, like how we do it live, kind of is also gave me a little bit of inspiration to start throwing more acts of diversity on the same bill. I just think that it's like, sometimes it's a lot to go to a dubstep show even and just hear straight dubstep for like 6 hours, you know?
Right.
So, and the same across for all genres, not even like I've been to hip hop shows and it's like there'll be 25 acts on a single bill and like they're only doing a song or two songs a piece and it's I don't know, a tactic. So I'm trying to like do something where you can highlight 5 or 6 like really good artists, hopefully mainly local, but you know, bring in that headliner if you have to and kind of see what happens. Just kind of just throwing it together here. So.
No, it makes sense because, you know, being in the industry for as long as any of us have been in the industry, I've also seen those shows that have, you know, the hip hop acts on there for say like 5 minutes, you know, and I don't personally think anything can really happen in 5 minutes, you know, right. At least 15 minutes, you know, 20 minute sets are awesome as well. But as you go through, it's it's gotta be like training. You know, right. You have those 5 minute sets that get you ready for those 15 minute sets. Those 15 minute sets get you ready for those 45 minute sets, but you've got to keep up in the weight. Because if you don't up the weight, you're going to get stuck in that one aspect. And then when that opportunity pops up and you've got to go play this really important show, but you've got to fill 45 minutes, you're like, what am I going to do now? And now you're not sure. So like if you know, and for the acts that are out there, the artists that are out there, I do suggest overdoing it. Like when you go and you practice, and you should be practicing like once a week at least, you know, yes, practice your 15 minute set, but like next week try to do a 20 minute set. I know you only got 15 minutes for that show, but add 5 minutes. And then the week after that, when you got that 20 minute set down and your breath is on point and you're breathing, you know, really you hit every single one of those pockets, then do the 30 minute set. And if you want to get crazy, do it on a treadmill, because then you're really pushing yourself. But that's, you know, that's rough, and as you can tell why I have the camera chest up, I don't do treadmills well. So, you know, it happens.
I've been practicing my rhymes while I do calisthenics now, like yoga and stuff.
There you go.
Yeah.
I would love to see a Spark Kent music video of you spitting over, like, jazzercise, like the old school, like, jazzercise things. I think it'd be the funniest thing I've ever seen. It'd be amazing.
The Jazzmatazz remix. Shout out Guru.
There you go. Oh, sir. that's a heavy lifting aspect right there. I'm going to do a Jazzmatazz remix. That's a lot of weight you're putting on your shoulders, sir. I appreciate the confidence. And now I will challenge you to do it because I want to see the end product. That is a heavy burden you put upon yourself. That is awesome. I appreciate that. you've been in the industry for a long time. You know, the people that you started out with, throughout anything. I mean, look, we are now in an evolution process as humans and as Americans that we no longer have one job.
Easy. Since we talk about evolution process, what made you mm-hmm. realize this transition that you wanted to be hip hop's Jim Carrey?
Dude, I just like honestly, the real answer to that is like I didn't ever, aside from like my grandfather who was just real, real corny and like just politically based and all sorts of craziness, like I didn't have a real strong father figure growing up, you know?
Okay.
So like I really paid heavy attention to like a lot of the movies that I watched growing up to like pull life lessons from and like morals and things. And Jim Carrey was just one of these dudes I always loved watching, you know, grow up. And I would say that like my day-to-day life, my mannerisms and kind of like how I act and what I say is a little Jim Carrey-esque. So that's where that comes from.
That explains your versatility?
Yeah. I think I can hop on any beat, man. Not everyone might like it, but I think I could ride any beat.
Now, you want to know something? That's huge, right? Like what you just said right there, to me, it speaks highly of you as a human being. Because, you know, you just said, I can hop on any beat. Not a lot of you might like what I do, but I feel like I can do any beat. And that's a lot, man. Like really, like props on that type of mentality. Because, you know, no matter what, no matter what, art is subjective. And if everybody likes every single piece of something, then there's nothing to talk about. And then, right. You know, and everything becomes really boring. You know, that's why there are so many different colors in a crayon box, right?
Mm-hmm. I used to make the joke to my mom growing up that that's why I'm a rapper, because I could never sing.
There you go. So no MGK stuff coming out for you? We're not going to, like, see the pop punk record coming?
Probably not. I mean, the closest it even ever got to that was like I had a song called Smoke So Much off the new album, and there's like a decent amount of auto tune on the hook that the engineer at the time was just convinced it needed, and I left it, and then people ended up telling me they like it. So, you know, sometimes it's cool to break the mold and go outside the box, you know?
Right.
Speaking of breaking the mold and going outside the box, Spark, what are your feelings on – actually, let me just rephrase and switch up the question. What does cannabis culture mean to you? Because it's a lot in your actual stage name. And also, I see the sweatshirt you got on too. That says a lot
about culture
as well.
Shout out Banana Cut.
Yeah.
Those are the boys right there. Yep. Cannabis culture is huge for me, man. Okay. I mean, to be very, like, dry about it. I mean, growing up, mm-hmm. I didn't smoke at all growing up. Like, I waited until I was probably, like, 17, 18 to, like, really start diving in. And the main reason was because I had people around me growing up that in the music scene that would be like, you know, you should smoke weed. It'll make you rap better. And, and for me, like, it's so dumb. I look at it, I laugh at it now, but like for me growing up, that was like a baseball player, like taking steroids or something, you know, like it sounds crazy, but I was like, I need to do this, like, all organic. I need to make sure it's coming from the heart. I need to make sure I'm being true to like who I am. And I think that once like life really started hitting me, because I was couch surfing from 16 to 18, and then 18, it was like life just bam, you know. And I kind of realized and started seeing through, because I should have been going to therapy. I wasn't going to therapy. And I had friends of mine who were like, you know, you're showing some like real, you know, similar symptoms to that of like PTSD and a little bit of bipolar. And, you know, have you ever considered cannabis? And that's kind of when I started, you know, trying it. And for a while, it was just self-medicating because I didn't really know how to go about getting a med card or anything like that. And then once I found out how relatively simple it was, and I got a med card, and honestly, I like being able to go to the dispensary and pick out like a pure sativa, a pure indica. The sativas are great for me during the daytime because it allows me to still be productive, but take the edge off, because sober me all the time. It's just very on edge and kind of like angsty. Hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so the sativa is great for the daytime. And then at night when I have trouble sleeping, I smoke indica and it usually just puts me right out. So it definitely helped. I would say helped my life an incredible amount, because I think truthfully, like if it wasn't for cannabis, that I would probably be doing something much worse. You know, I lost my mother to a fentanyl overdose. And,
my condolences.
Yeah. I appreciate that. And I do believe that, like, you know, the addiction end of it does run in the family, especially with like genetics, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So these days, like, honestly, like I drank seltzers, you know, I have like 2-3 seltzers, and, shout out Fat Orange Cat out of North Haven.
There you go.
And other than that, man, I medicate now, and it really does help me. Even my girlfriend tells me all the time, she's like, you're always in such a better mood when you're, you know, when you're medicated and you're not like too worried about life and just focused on music or focused on the task at hand, you know?
How great was your mood when you met Rod Digga?
Crazy. It was wild too, because the very first time we met, it was she was going out the door, and I was coming back from Kelly Square Pizza, and the dudes at Kelly Square Pizza were the coolest dudes ever. Gave me like a free pie to bring back to the venue for everybody, and they're like, "Yo, if you see Rod Digga, you tell her she got a free pie on us." I was like, "All right, bet." And then she's literally walking out the door as I'm walking in, and I was like, "Yo, Rod," and she's like, "What's up?" And I was like, "They got free pizza for you at Kelly Square." And then she walks down there, and then they end up giving her like free food. And she killed the performance too. Like I was telling my buddy, that was the best hip hop performance I've seen since KRS-One opening up for him.
At you saw KRS. That's amazing.
I opened for him at Toad's.
Oh, good for you. Good for you. How was it meeting an icon like that?
It's always a crazy experience, man, because you never know what's going to happen. Like when I was a lot younger, my first big show was like opening up for Mac Miller at 16.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And I was just so excited. Like, I didn't know. I didn't have no manager. I didn't have anybody to be like, this is how you act. Like, this is what you're supposed to do. Like, you know, it was actually funny. I met Tree J, who's like one of Mac's, or, you know, used to be one of Mac's really good friends. And I wrote on a dollar bill. It was the very last dollar I had in my pocket with a Sharpie. And it was like, my info, my MySpace page, like whatever, and gave it to Tree J. And then later that night, when I ended up getting to meet Mac, because I didn't think I was going to get to meet him,
right,
I said, "Yo, did you get the dollar I gave you?" And he starts laughing about it, saying that was like one of the funniest things anyone ever given him. And yeah, so, but you know, you learn like through that. Like I've never really had a manager, so I've kind of just had to learn through these situations of meeting these celebrities, you know? Like, Action Bronson was one of the coolest people I ever met.
Awesome.
Yeah. You know, then there's other people I've met that weren't so friendly and weren't so nice, weren't so cool. Like, I thought Riff Raff was going to be a way cooler dude. And, not so much.
I mean, it comes with the territory. Some people you're going to meet, you're going to have great experiences with. Some people you're not. I mean, that's just everyday life. But just in terms of meeting just all these great musicians, what have you learned from them just in terms of crowd control as a performer?
Oof. KRS taught me, I think, the most.
Yeah.
Because I would use to study like KRS, Atmosphere, Eminem, just like all these people who had like crazy live performances.
Right.
And study little things, because I remember being like 16 or 17 being like, why don't I have a hype man?
Right.
Like I need a hype man. Like, and I realized that at like 17. And then like from there, it's kind of just learning how to, like you said, I don't want to say manipulate a crowd, because I guess that kind of sounds negative, but
no.
You want to learn. It's like MC means move the crowd. You got to figure out how to move the crowd, you know?
Yeah.
Right.
And there's all sorts of different ways to do that. You could do a question where they got to answer you back. You could do some chants, you know. Like I remember first performing at Toad's, and one of the things we always used to do at Toad's was the 203 chant. And people always used to do that, you know. Even if they didn't like the set, even if they didn't like me, they still shout out, you know, 203 as loud as they could. So,
right.
You know, like you got to learn how to, you got, like you said, you got to learn how to play the game.
It is. Mm-hmm. It is. There's a lot of structure when it comes just to entertaining. And a lot of people really don't know that. You just don't go on the stage and just have a microphone and just wing it. I mean, that's the whole reason why they have practice.
Practice, man. Get a mirror. That's the best advice I can give anybody. Get a mirror, a big, big mirror. Put that in your studio and practice in front of that.
That is true. That's why a lot of performance areas have mirrors. You are absolutely right. They have to do what they have to do. I was with Easy a lot of times. And actually, you can attest to this too, because you've been in these venues. Me and Easy have been at Stella Blues, what's the venue, Easy? PST?
Rest in peace to PhD.
There's a whole bunch of other these great venues, and you can tell when someone actually really did practice their set, and so when someone really did it and just winged it and had a couple drinks. So you can definitely tell the difference when you have all these things. So that's my spiel. But Ease, you can just piggyback off that.
Well, no, it's so true. Don't get me wrong, and you know, seeing there and. As a business person, you know, you take your brand out there as a musician, as you know, you're taking your brand out there and you're representing your brand. And from a business person, you get to watch and who you get to pay attention to who you want to tie your brand to moving forward. You know, when I go, even when I'm not, when I go to support a show, I'm shopping. I'm like, oh, this person has a great set. They were able to move the crowd. They were able to do this, this, and this. I want to link with this person. I want to build with this person moving forward. You know, that continuously happens. So even, and I say this to all the musicians that are out there, because look, no matter what, you know, there will be those five people shows. You know, those five people shows, you still got to give 110% because you don't know who one of those five people are. One of those five people might be a dude who, you know, books out every single night, every single time. And he really digs the fact that you committed to that. And now he's willing to take you under his wing, or she's willing to take you under her wing and willing to build and grow with you. You know, it's important, like, because you got guys like Spar Kent here, you know, ready to take on the entire world, making his own promotion company, looking for those people that are given 110% to those five people in that room. Am I right?
No, absolutely. I like what you said, too, about the five people thing. It's I actually played a festival up in it was like upstate New York, or no, it was in Maine. Equinox, that was the name of it. It was like a primarily like, you know, a big bass, you know, electronic festival. And I was probably like one of like one or two, three other hip hop acts. Kyle Gold, shout out Kyle Goldstein. He was on there too. So, but basically, you know, I had a main stage slot at 12:30. So I already knew there was probably not going to be that many people out. So we get there, and it's this massive 40-foot stage, you know, like huge monitors, the whole nine. And there, like you said, there's probably five people out there, 10 people out there, max. But gave them my all. And one of the people in the crowd happened to be this photographer who was shooting the festival. And I also, on the side, like just as a hobby, I shoot photos. So I bring my Sony with me everywhere, especially to festivals, because you meet a lot of people, and it's cool to just, you know. And so later on, like the next day, when he see me again, he like approached me when I was in the crowd taking pictures and basically was like giving me pointers like right then and there on like, you know, like what settings I should be using. And he just told me, he's like, yo, I caught, you know, caught your set. I really liked your music. He's like, you know, you do photos for fun. And I said, yeah, just do this on the side. And he's like, you know, try doing this. Like, and he switched it up. And within 2 seconds, these 4K pictures were looking crispy. So, you know, it's like you said, you never know who's watching.
Now yeah, we're watching on WNHHLP 103.5 FM New Haven, myself, Prestige, and my partner in crime, Long Island Rays, Elm City Made, EZ Blues is in the building. Spar Kent is with us. Easy Blues, you got something on top of your head. It's a light bulb. Go right
ahead. I was going to say, you know, we're starting to be offered some of the festival spots. And well, one of the people that we work with on a regular is like, look, I can get you a festival spot, but it's going to be 11 o'clock in the morning. You know, everyone's going to be sleeping in their tents. I was like, oh, that's cool. We'll play our loudest set possible because they'll be awake by the time we're done. You know, and that's kind of the mentality you have to have. Like, okay, cool. It's, you know, you're looking at this as a bad thing. I'm looking at it as, you know, who the hell just woke me up? And then they find out who woke them up. And then they're going to like what you do. That being said, be good at what you do. Don't just be loud and obnoxious, because then you're probably going to get punched in the face. And I'm not a fan of getting punched in the face. This is my moneymaker. You know what I mean? It's important. But now, when you're dealing with the festival stuff that you do and all of this, you have grown a lot as a person, as an artist, and everything that is out there. But there are growing pains. There are growing pains in life. There are growing pains as artists. And a lot of that has to do with, like, say, the original crew you come through with. One says becomes a lawyer, or one, you know, goes down a bad path, or one goes down these different ways, and they're not necessarily standing shoulder to shoulder with you anymore. How are you dealing with that as an artist? You know, especially someone who, like myself, came up with more of a rockier family experience. So then our friends become our family. How are you dealing with that?
So, I mean, I feel like kind of like the way I've always dealt with it is, like, one thing my mom always told me was, like, no matter what happens, you know, you always want to have a way to pay the bills, right? Mm-hmm. You know? And for me, like, I always, like, from 16 on, like, I was working full time. And this past year is the first year where I didn't work at all, you know, mm-hmm. other than things that I was doing to bring myself in money, you know, whether that was recording people, doing graphics work, trying to shoot videos, mm-hmm. just become self-sustaining. You know, but I think it's very important that you try to find a balance between that so-called work life and your, you know, outside of work life.
Right.
Like, I was a cell phone salesman for 5 years, you know, and at right. the height of, like, when I was opening up for people and stuff. And it also humbles you, I think, a lot too, you know, because,
mm-hmm.
you know, you're waking up, you're working a job, let's say you're dealing with the public, you know, you're probably going home pissed off, and then 6-7 o'clock comes and you're going to a venue playing a stage and there's 100, mm-hmm. 200 people in front of you. So, you know, I think it definitely provides a humbling experience, mm-hmm. while also still keeping you afloat, because most artists are not making good money, you know, especially from the start. So it's like, you got to have something there to keep you, you know, your foundation intact. Mm-hmm.
Right. Because
your mental foundation will cripple. Like, don't get it twisted.
Mm-hmm.
It will.
No, definitely. And it's so true. You know, you have to have that strong foundation going through, and, you know, how many side jobs on top of side jobs on top of different type of hustles you have to go. And honestly, the first couple of years, you're going to probably lose money. You know, you're going to put money into the product, especially being it on your own, doing it independent, because you got to pay for studio time. You've got to pay for that video. You've got to, you know, you got to have your wardrobe on point. You've got to pay for promotion. You got to pay for the marketing, because you can have the best song out there.
That's why I'm so against the pay to play things, because I have the same argument with people, like other rapper friends mm-hmm. of mine all the time, where they're like, you got to invest in yourself and this and that. And I'm like, yeah, but investing in yourself and, like, paying your way to get onto a stage rather than, you know what I mean? Doing the work, putting that work in. It's like, I don't know. There's different ways, you know, different strokes.
Definitely. And the investment that I look at too is, I'd rather take that money and invest it in the marketing of the music, you know, because, hey, look, I'll float my own boat. You know, we launched Shame Penguin. We dropped 2 singles during a pandemic. You know, we have 3 singles that are out there and no album. But because of the marketing behind that, those 3 singles, you know, almost broke 200K this past year. But because it was marketed to the right, we invested that our money then wisely in the marketing aspect of it. We're not going to pay to get onto a show, but you're dang right, I'm going to pay for someone to advertise the show. I'll go pay for a billboard. I'll go pay for a billboard right now. There's a great electronic billboard on 95. Right. I can get you a good deal on. Don't get me wrong. You know, but I'm not going to pay, you know, I'm not going to pay the promoter to get into a show.
It's like, our job as artists is to perform. So mm-hmm. why am I going to pay you to do my job? You know,
I appreciate that so much. There's a tear. I have one single emo tear right now. Just for that comment. You know, I'm just saying, like, it's, you know, it's important. No, I really, really dig
that. One thing that is important, though, mm-hmm. This man has over 5,000 streams on Spotify, over 31 countries, and what I think over streaming what 334 hours of his playlist that's been going on. That's pretty impressive so far for just a single guy for just promoting himself.
Those are Bush League. We gotta get those numbers up, baby.
We will. I'm telling you, I'm gonna connect you with some people.
No, I'm very grateful though.
We don't build, sir.
Very grateful though for everybody that has been listening and has been paying attention and. You know,
absolutely. We just want to have enough time to play your song, so we're just trying to get this interview done just a little bit over. But this is the time of the broadcast where you have to just promote yourself like you always do. Any social media that you want to give out to our audience, anything, any more events that are coming out in December or next month for next year of 2022 that you want to just give out to our audience right now here.
All right, so you can find me personally at Spark_Kent on Instagram. It's probably the best place to get a hold of me. Best Buds Booking is on Instagram and Facebook now. So if you're interested in booking a show with us, if you're interested in playing one of our shows, working with us somehow, you can reach us on there. You want crypto advice? You can hit me on Twitter at White House Daddy, aka Shill Clinton. I'm putting in the work in the crypto space there, trying to make that passive income. Highly recommend everyone else does.
Absolutely.
And if you're into cannabis culture and you're into growing, specifically deep water culture, check out CT Hydro. That's my personal page for my personal legal grow. And I do a lot of updates on there and stuff, try to educate people and educate myself in the process.
Absolutely. Any advice you got any for prospective artists that actually want to go into the similar path you want to be on before we get play your song?
Don't be afraid to go against the grain.
Okay.
I feel like my buddy's a surfer, and like I had this conversation with him years ago, to keep it real brief, but basically it's like you only got so many nice waves that roll through, right, in a day. And if you got 10,000 people all trying to ride the same wave, how are you going to stand out?
Right.
You can't. So you got to figure out a different wave, right? And I think more people just need to figure out that different wave. Don't be afraid to go against the grain. Keep it organic. Keep it yourself. And you'd be surprised how many people actually enjoy it and want to rock with you.
Definitely.
Sparkette, thank you. This song is called 10.
Thank you guys, man. Appreciate this.
Absolutely, brother. On WNHH LP 103.5 FM New Haven, myself, Press Steve, and my partner in crime, Long Island Rays, Elm City Made, Easy Blues. This is Behind the Brand. Thank you, Spark.
Who am I? Mr. Windowsill Snooper, comedians Jim Carrey with a dash of Bill Cooper. Highly interested in Vince's quest for the shooter, while educating masses trapped at desk behind computers. I know emotions can bottle up quickly. Gears grind like transmissions from the politicians shifting. Republican and Democrat, it's hardly an illusion. Pawns playing pawns, masterminding their confusion. They want you to stop debating the proper training when the psychological operations are hyper complicated. Divert the attention away from the bombs created, primarily to sway voters and get nominated. But in other news, the government's your owner, creator and controller, from the famous to the loners. Nobody's safe, even the faithful and sober receive a plate full of deception as the hate grows cold. In these tinfoil dreams, everything's fake, darling, nothing's what it seems. Yeah, I need an escape, find me waiting for the graves by the gates. In these tinfoil dreams, everything's fake, darling, nothing's what it seems. From the soil to the greens, the air that we breathe, they want you to believe. Give me 60 seconds, babe, I'll break it down in a minute. Ill since birth, probably found at the clinic. Doctor looking like my bottle had some powder up in it. Word to concern, a body turning thanks to counterfeit gimmicks. Watching the powerful spin it, mansion chilling while millions live in misery. Who needs a cure when it's a $1 billion industry? From cancer to marijuana, ingest the history. Follow the paper route like UPS delivery. If it ain't illegal, then they're making a buck. Taxation's a fancy term for them taking a cut. Make no mistake and you're stuck. Fucking Nathan and Duff. I have to walk through airports where we take to
of my nuts. No insurance got me smoking till my fever dies. $5 billion less a year if it's legalized. No wonder big pharma stay fighting like Takashi's legal team to push a whack product mass copy for the fiends.
Yeah, I said, like, oh,
fiends. For your dreams. Everything's fake, darling. Nothing's what it seems. Yeah, I need an escape. Find me waiting for the grace. By the gates, by the gates. In these tinfoil dreams, everything's fake, darling. Nothing's what it seems. From the soil to the greens, the air that you breathe, yeah. I want you to believe.
Yeah. I made this track as living fact that I once gave a shit. A world's falling apart, but I'm not the one to be saving it. More of a messenger than destined for a patriot, but please try to convince me how steel beams bend like paper clips. I'd love to hear it, and before you start resenting me, explain fighting a sand war for the last quarter century. Fox News tells you we're protecting foreign entities, yet illegal immigrants are thrown in penitentiaries. Seems hypocritical, plus Hunch was now slave from military forces letting flood around spray. Corporate smoking mirrors make the run around pay. Watching black gold circulate in underground caves. That's tragedy backed by apathy. Student versus faculty. Federal agents suited up in black chasing after me. Act casually before I blast cash capacity. Disappear and pop up like security ads for McAfee. McAfee.
In these tinfoil dreams, everything's fake, darling. Nothing's what it seems. Yeah, I need an escape. Find me waiting for the graves. By the gates, by the gates. In these tinfoil dreams, everything's fake, darling. Nothing's what it seems. From the soil to the greens, the air that we breathe, they want you to believe.
This is the test, the time to separate the man from the boy. John's willpower, individuality, character are slipping down the drain.